and welcome to episode 4 of the Instant Offense Podcast. I'm James Hollis, and you're not. Joining us today, we'll jump right into it. I got Drew Garrison. He's the editor-in-chief over at the Silver Screen and Roll. Drew, what's up, man?
What's going on, man? Thank you for having me on, and looking forward to chatting about everybody's favorite team, the Lakers, for a little bit today.
All right, I'm going to hang up on you here in about 5 seconds. Now, this is like when the Bloods and the Crips came together. This is like Cowboys and Indians sitting down and breaking bread, because you know I'm a Celtics fan. So it's good to have you on. You're the inaugural team preview guest that we're going to have. So Lakers are first up because I think you had one of the more interesting off seasons, and I mean everyone likes to talk about the Lakers. Honestly, either we love you or hate you. It's true. So before we jump into it, I'm going to ask you, so tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the SilverScreenRoll.com and talk me a little bit about your movement over there.
All right, so Silver Screen Roll is under the SB Nation, you know, brand. We've been a Lakers blog for quite a long time. It's been around for, you know, probably like 5 years plus. I inherited it a couple years ago. And we've been building up our presence. You know, we want to be the Smart Fans Lakers blog and, you know, the place where, you know, you want to go and read what people have to say about what the Lakers are up to and get some insight, get some analysis, and kind of grow with our community. And we take a lot of pride in everything you write. We're not just trying to put out slop. We're not just trying to get page views. We're trying to put out the best Lakers product out there. And, you know, there's a lot of Laker fans out there that, you know, even as a Laker fan, that it's hard to, you know, always deal with that kind of noise, I guess you would say. But, you know, I think there's a place that, you know, Lakers fans who really want to talk about the game of basketball and, you know, be serious about it and really just kind of break bread, you know, and I think that's what we offer. And, you know, that's what we do. And, you know, we've been building up our team over the last week or so. We did some recruitment, and we're looking forward to, you know, bringing a bigger and better product out there. And, you know, we're just always keeping our eye on the future and just trying to make the best Lakers site possible. So that's what we're doing over at Silver Screen and Roll this summer.
Sounds more like, it's not just a website, it's a community, almost like a family over there, it sounds like. And I see that you actually just got my man Anthony Irwin. I was on his show before. Shout out to Anthony, I hope you listen to this eventually. how long have you been a Lakers fan?
I grew up in Southern California myself. You know, I grew up in Whittier, California. So I grew up into it. You know, I'm 27 now. So as long as I can remember the game of basketball, I've been a Lakers fan. And so it's just hard to escape. You know, it was in my family. You know, I grew up watching kind of the end of the Magic era and, you know, Nick Van Exel and Eddie Jones coming in. And just kind of when I was just really understanding what basketball was about was kind of when Kobe and Shaq came together. So for me, I've been really lucky as a fan of the game, because I've always had a really fun team to watch. And, you know, I know I am a Lakers fan and all that, but, you know, it's hard to escape that type of magnetism in Southern California when the Lakers are rolling like they were back then.
That, I dig it. It must be, but then it must have been pretty tough these last couple of years. Things turned around. Did you watch any summer league? Did you catch summer league this year?
I was out at summer league this year for about a week and a half, I'd say. And You know, credentials and all that, the rest of the nation, and, you know, watched every Laker game, was at every post game scrum. You know, I was in my notebook writing frantic little notes about plays that I saw. And, you know, I really, you know, I think you said it best, is that this Lakers team is a really interesting one, and there's two sides of it. And the first one, which we're talking about, is going to be the young guys. You know, it's not just about, you know, Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell. It's about, you know, Julius Randle coming back. It's about whether Anthony Brown can really show himself early in his career, you know, because he is a four-year player. If, you know, Robert Upshaw, can he earn that last roster spot? You know, can he keep his, you know, head straight and kind of take advantage of being this giant force on, you know, on defense and developing as a center at the NBA level. So I think, you know, the Lakers youth, you know, seeing them up close for their first little steps together at Summer League was pretty interesting, even if the product in the court wasn't all that great this year.
I thought the product was awesome this year. Like I said, I don't think a lot of people knew who Robert Upshaw was. And so that, like, I did a little research. So I heard his name before the summer league, yeah. And he was as advertised. He's tough. He's long. Great shot blocker. And I saw the complaints about D'Angelo Russell, but those people are weirdos, because just watching the way he moves, the way he handled the rock, the way he, you can just see he has it. I think he has it.
I agree. And watching real quick, just the note on watching Russell in person is the assists are great, you know, and the high passes are great, but he moves the ball really, really naturally. Like, he just moves the ball. Like, and it's hard to describe. I guess it's a little bit jarring because, you know, as somebody who's watched the Lakers for the last few years, the ball stops a lot in the Lakers offense, and that's whether or not Kobe's there. It's, you know, with a guy like Jordan Clarkson or under you know, Princeton offense, and the ball stops a lot in the Lakers offense. Russell, he's very good about just moving the ball naturally and just kind of getting slow going. So it's a lot more evident in person, which was pretty impressive to see kind of up close.
Yeah, I'm really, really intrigued to see the dynamic between a young point guard like him who wants the ball in his hand, well, needs the ball in his hand to be, you know, developing who he is, and playing with a Kobe Bean Bryant, man. That's what's going to interest me. What are your expectations for Kobe with this young team? Because, I mean, like you just said, Julius Randle, Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, they're going to need the ball, and they're going to need time to make mistakes. They're going to just need time to get out there and spread their wings a little bit. But at the same time, they're playing with – I actually was just reading on Silver Screen and Roll the piece that you posted about Kobe, which was from an article – I'm sorry, brain fart right now. Who wrote that article that you referenced
that Kobe The about Jordan comparing their kind of games like that year, Jordan, was that by Harrison?
No, you posted it, and it was Kobe talking about if he's going to retire or not.
Oh, yeah. He just released a little Q&A with Mark Spears, the Yahoo Sports, who's, you know, very good at his job, and he's just kind of talking about, you know, we'll see by the end of the year, it's too early to tell, you know. I think really, and he stressed this multiple times, that he wants to see how his body performs, you know, for a full year, and if he's going to get another season and the injury and all that type of stuff. But he's also talking about bulking up his upper body, getting his legs, you know, strong under him, and he's talking about running with these young guys, actually. And, you know, the Lakers are planning to slide Kobe up to small forward to give, you know, Clarkson and Russell some air to breathe as far as minutes are concerned. So if Kobe can really get out there and, you know, just run a little bit in transition with these guys, and kind of even if it's like a trailer three almost as a small forward, even though he's not a prolific three-point shooter, you know, he's still effective from that point. You know, if you get him a spot up three in transition, if he's just running the floor with these guys, then I think he could be effective. But it's really, like you said, it's hard to say, because you can even look at, like, Russell. I guess you said it best, is that Russell, Randle, and Clarkson all kind of operate best when the ball's in their hands, all kind of differently in different ways. And, you know, Kobe's always been the conductor. I'll say that he's the conductor. He likes to have the ball in his hands. Maybe
he's a focal point. How about that? He used to be the focal point.
let's use some positive connotation language here. He's the focal point of the offense. He likes to have the ball in his hands. Let's just say. So it's curious, and I think that's even something. I don't really worry too much about Kobe as a Laker fan anymore, because Kobe is going to do what Kobe's going to do, and he's only here for so much longer. You know, I'm more curious about this same dynamic playing out between Clarkson and Russell, and that's where I think my biggest question mark is. It's not so much about what Kobe is going to bring to the court, because he's only going to bring what he can bring, and that's all it's going to be. You know, at the end of the day, it's all kind of the realization that it's at the end is already very well set in for Lakers fans, and especially, you know, myself. And these last few years have been very evident of that. So now you look ahead, and I think you worry about fit elsewhere, and I think, you know, that's a bigger question to me with the other guards, with Russell and Clarkson.
Well, I think more, I'm asking more, not so much on the court, because we know, I mean, Kobe's going to get his shots, he's going to get his touches, and those guys understand, they're playing with a living legend. They understand that. It's funny, because people think I hate Kobe Bryant. I don't hate Kobe Bryant at all. I respect his game. I mean, the guy was incredible in his prime, incredible scorer.
Mm-hmm.
But my question more is, all right, remember last year you guys had the late Lakers win, and the guys hooped and hollered and celebrated, and then Kobe and Byron Scott got so pissed, and they're like, oh, professionalism, we're the Lakers. So this is my thing. You got this young team. You know, you got these young Colts. You got these young Labrador Retrievers bouncing around, happy to be here, happy to learn. how do you think that dynamic with Coach Scott and Kobe is going to play out? Because honestly, I mean, Kobe, it's not from all reports, it's not fun playing basketball with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you hear, right?
Yeah, he says it himself. He knows it, and you know the way he teaches. I think it's a very good thing that they could learn. They're going to get his work ethic and his how he takes the game so serious. That's good. You know, he's a professional.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see that playing out with these young guys who are going to make mistakes? They're going to have bad stretches, and you think he's going to ride them? Do you think Kobe will, him and Scott will tone it down? How do you see that playing out?
I really do think it's too much to expect Kobe to be anything else than he's always been, I think. You know, why would he change at this point? So I think you're going to have to anticipate Kobe being pretty hard on these kids. And, you know, I think things will play out, you know, well if they're receptive and if they're, you know, they do show that they're working hard, which, you know, by everything we hear about guys like Russell, Randall, Clarkson, you know, they want to get better, you know, and they all say the right things, and they're not going to say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to work as hard or as this or that or whatever. But they say all the right things, and if they do all the right things, then he'll be happy about it. But I think there will be, you know, those moments of disconnect, like you're referencing. That moment was, you know, I think it went around to them on Jimmy Kimmel with Kobe's reaction, right, or something to that extent. And
yeah, it was on Kimmel, and Scott came out and said some things about it too. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And so I think, young teams like to celebrate. They like that positive energy. They like to still get together. You know, small things to them that really excite them aren't going to be, you know, Kobe's going to wonder why you guys celebrating this. This is pretty common, or this is not even that great, or why we're in this position to begin with. So I think there will be some disconnect there, but I don't see it being chaotic. I don't see chaos breaking out, because I think ultimately it comes down to the fact that everybody realizes that the end is basically here for Kobe and the start is basically there for the kids. And just kind of accepting them as two separate things that are just kind of trying to do their best to coexist, you know, for their little bit of time together is kind of the best approach. I wouldn't worry too much about how well Kobe's going to integrate and join these kids. Hopefully he can teach them, you know, the ropes, and he can, you know, instill that type of work ethic that is what makes Kobe so, you know, legendary, as they say. But ultimately, they're going to make their own identities, and Kobe's really going to be, he's just kind of an echo at this point in his career. He's an echo that's still in Staples Center, and it'll be there for a long time, even after he retires.
Whew, man, he's an echo. I never thought of it. I thought of it that way. That's kind of, it's kind of sad, man. I remember Kobe coming in the league. I remember when he went through his phase when he tried to be like Jordan. You know, he basically patterned himself completely after Jordan. And now we're talking to the point where, like, he's an echo. He has one foot out the door, man. That's nuts.
It is crazy. And I think it's like when you look at the comparison, and this is the comparison we see all the time, but like to Tim Duncan at this point in his career. And I don't think anybody would call Tim Duncan an echo at this point in his career. But, you know, it's just two very different situations at this point in their lives and in their kind of professional paths. But, you know, I don't consider Tim Duncan an afterthought for his team, whereas I think Kobe, you know, sure, he's going to be Kobe. He's always going to be the focal point. He's always going to be the story. He's always going to be the headline. But when you look at the Lakers, you know, you're not thinking how Kobe Bryant per se is going to lead these guys at this point. You're thinking, what is he going to lead these guys with before he's gone?
This is one of the reasons that I'm having you on, because, you know, some of the most intriguing teams I want to talk a little more in depth about, tell their story. So while the Lakers have had a couple down years, and we're going to talk about this in a minute too, I am fully into the belief that the Lakers pulled off a secret tank the last couple of years. By secret tank, I mean they said all the right things, they brought in free agents, whoever they could, but Byron Scott is a secret tank coach, because you're not going to win games with Byron Scott without having a great point guard, as we saw. You know, he had Jason Kidd, and then he had Chris Paul. And I am firmly believing that, and it's a good thing. It worked perfectly. You got Julius Randle, you got D'Angelo Russell. But while you guys were struggling a little bit, across town, the Clippers were kind of taking off. And we know it's never going to be a Clippers town, as much as people might want to, you know, say that. It's never going to be a Clippers town. But right now the Clippers are riding high, and, you know, you guys are further down in the trenches trying to get back to that position. What are your thoughts about the Clippers this offseason? They re-signed DeAndre, and they beefed up the bench. They're prepared to go deep. Talk to me a little bit about that dynamic between the Lakers right now and the Clippers right now, and where you stand with that.
Well, I mean, first I think we start by acknowledging the Clippers had a really great year last year. Their efficiencies across the board are very good. Kind of all year, they kind of flew under the radar. And then when they pulled that upset, I guess you could say, over the Spurs, it was like, wow, look at the Clippers. You know, they're actually, you know, they're taking off. And then they sputtered, you know, miserably down the stretch of, you know, against the Rockets. And I think as a franchise, you know, it's pretty embarrassing debacle. But you move forward, and they really are maybe the luckiest team, you know, this summer because of DeAndre Jordan coming back. And they're lucky the moratorium existed, because if it didn't, you know, there's a situation where DeAndre signs, even if he has that buyer's remorse, you know, not buyer's remorse, but, you know, signer's remorse, you know, there would be no turning back. But they got lucky that DeAndre came back, because that really makes their team tick. So now you're looking at the team, and they've upgraded, right? They have Lance Stephenson. They have Josh Smith, who I think did some really great things with Dwight Howard last year, and I think he should help their front court rotation. And I think that team looks better on paper than they did with, you know, Matt Barnes and Spencer Hawes last year. And I think, you know, Paul Pierce will contribute whatever he can, and he's probably good for, you know, a couple big shots if it comes down to it. I think you can count Paul to come up with a few things, you know, and the fact that he knows, you know, what Doc's going to expect out of him, where he needs to be on the floor. I think, you know, the Clippers overall look like they improved. It's just the West is so tough that I wouldn't even consider them, you know, a top two team at this point in the West. So, but as far as the rivalry goes, you know, I think it's cute.
Okay, real quick, let me tell you, you use the word rivalry. Do you think do you feel like it's a rivalry?
There's a rivalry there, because I think there's definite animosity between the fan bases, and I think both the teams definitely get up to play each other. But I think it's just a sibling rivalry. It's not like a Celtics Lakers rivalry. I think there's different rivalries, and you know, this is just like, you know, you and your little brother are trying to fight over the controller, and there's only one of them, but you both want to play Sonic. And you know, Lakers, you know, they like to play their Sonic. They like to get their rings. You know what I mean? So, I don't really consider it a rivalry in that sense, but I think it's good. I think it's fun. I think it's having a reason to cheer against or for a team at any elevated level makes it fun for the fans. And as somebody who covers the games, you know, and watches every game, just having a little bit of extra reason to kind of enjoy a game is always fun. So, you know, it's cute. It's fun. It's good for the game, but, sure. It's nothing to say. It's not serious. This isn't Scorpion and Sub-Zero here.
So let me ask you, you guys didn't make the playoffs, obviously, and the Clippers went kind of deep. Is it like taboo for a Lakers fan to kind of pull for the Clippers? Because, I mean, hey, LA, or are you guys like, screw those guys no matter what?
Oh, man, everybody likes an underdog story. So I don't think it's taboo, you know. Back before the Clippers were a big team, you know, back in the day when they were just like Lamar Odom and like Elton Brand and Chris Kaman, I was like, all right, you know, maybe these guys can put something together. And, you know, these days it's a little different scenario. They always have Chris Paul, and they're a very good team. I'll never discredit them for being a very good basketball team with, you know, very talented players. But, you know, I think it's a little bit taboo, and I think that's kind of where you could see that there's definitely a rivalry now, because back in the day, I remember people would, you know, if you liked Clippers, cool, you know, whatever, nobody cared. Now it's like, oh, you like Clippers and you're a Lakers fan? Like, it raises eyebrows, you know. So I think it's a little bit of a frowned upon thing these days.
Yeah, I can imagine, because before it was like a cute little sideshow, right? They stunk and they were kind of entertaining, but they were the Clippers. But now that they're actually, you know, a quote unquote challenge to the Lakers, that it's almost like you're a traitor, probably. So let's talk about this though. And Clippers fans, you might want to turn this off for a couple minutes, because let's go back to the meltdown in the playoffs. Clippers were up, they're up 3-1, and they were up, I think, 19 in the third of the closeout game. and end up losing that game, and then losing the next game. And have you ever seen anything like that before in your life?
That's one of the biggest meltdowns I may have ever seen in the playoffs. Like, I just, you know, when you have that type of momentum and you just need that one game, and the Clippers look dominant, I think. They look dominant in the playoffs. And, I don't know, they just fell apart. It was like, I don't know what kind of simile or metaphor to use, but it was very impressive that they actually failed that hard. It's something that I think will haunt them, and they have to do whatever it takes to put it behind them and just completely forget it happened, because that type of stuff is what shakes kind of cores.
You know what's funny? And I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm with you. I think Chris Paul is absolutely incredible. He's the top probably five player in the league right now. But if you look at him, he was injured in game. He was hurt in game in one, right? He didn't play game one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Clippers won pretty handily. He played a little bit, I think, in game two and a little more in game three. But the more he played, the tides of that series turned to Houston's favor. Which is weird. I don't understand how that worked out. So, all right, Clippers fans, you can tune back in. So, let me ask you this. Let's talk about this. We'll talk a little bit about what we got coming up this season.
Cool.
Give me your top four. Who right now? Your top four seeds in the West.
You got Warriors number one. They were wire to wire the best team last year. They deserved all the respect they got. I'm disappointed that they didn't get to take on the Cavaliers full strength. I think they still obviously it would have been a great series either way. LeBron played his tail off. It was incredible to watch him. But I would have liked this Warriors team, who was so credibly and visibly good, to not have that kind of, well, they didn't beat LeBron at, you know, with the team. But so I still look at them, though, as the number one team in the West. And I'm going to go Spurs number two because, you know, they're the Spurs. They had an incredible offseason. You put LaMarcus Aldridge, David West. You brought back Danny Green. You know, you extended Kawhi Leonard. That team is set to really go all in for a championship this year. I got them number two. And then it's really close for three and four. I think right now I have three is the Clippers and four is the Rockets. And I think that could really flip-flop either way, in my opinion. But I do like Clippers and Rockets in the mix at three and four.
Did you say what you're three and four?
Clippers and Rockets.
Clippers and Rockets. Wow. OKC's not even up there, huh? Woo. Okay.
OKC
fan.
Yeah. I'm just concerned about the health there. They just, with between KD's foot and Russ's, you know, yearly injuries, I'm just, you know, I'll wait to see what happens with OKC before betting big on them again.
Okay, well, everybody, it's at Drew Garrison, at Drew Garrison with the SBN, at Drew Garrison,
yes,
SBN, he just said OKC doesn't have a shot at a top four seed. So make sure
that's what I said.
I'm a little different. I definitely agree that, man, I got to put Warriors number one. And then I think OKC is going to come in number two. I think they're deeper than ever. Ooh. They can afford to let off the gas a little bit with KD and Russ. And, I mean, I really think people kind of out of sight, out of mind with this team, because these are two of the top six, seven players in the NBA. To me, I think two of the top five, but I understand some people aren't that high on Russ. And then you add, you know, you had a real deal backup point guard who could start on some teams. You got Morrow there for stretching the floor. Serge stepped his game up from outside. So you got a tremendous stretch four who can also block shots at the rim. He's a unicorn. I don't care what other people say about Cantor. He can play. Is he overpaid? Yes. But he can score and play and take the pressure off those guys. I think they're going to be number two. Spurs are going to be number three. And I don't know who I said was going to be number four. Probably maybe Houston number four. But, yeah. I dig it. I get where you're coming from. So how about the rest of it? So give me your next one. Give me five through eight.
Whew. Five through eight. I got five. I'm looking at the Grizzlies. I think they're so consistent, and they didn't really change much in their formula, obviously, this offseason. But, you know, it's a proven formula. And when you have a guy like Marcus Gasol and Mike Conley and Zach Randolph on the team, they're always going to be competitive. And then I got Thunder at number six. I'm concerned about their health through the season. Then we'll go number seven. This is where it got really dicey for me. Number seven, I got the Pelicans. And that's with, you know, Anthony Davis actually playing about every game and Ryan Anderson staying healthy. And, you know, they've had injury problems every year. And, you know, if they can get it all together and Anthony Davis takes another step forward, you know, they're going to be very good. So I got Pelicans number 7, and we're going to go Suns number 8. I like Eric Bledsoe. I like the addition of Tyson Chandler, even if it didn't land them their second guy. They got them a serious defensive center who knows his role, who's going to, you know, help his teammates as a health defender and in the team schemes. And, you know, I think Phoenix, you know, they take us another step forward. They're right in there in the mix at number 8.
Well, there you go, Suns fans. You give them props, too, because I'm with you. I got Phoenix actually number 7. I don't know, man. The Clippers, I think, are almost plateaued. And I know that regular season, they're going to be monsters as always. Chris Paul is going to run a top 3 offense, of course. He's so efficient. I just worry. I don't even worry. It just seems that a team with a point guard who is the best player on that squad but is not a huge scoring threat, I just don't see. Yeah, so I got Clippers 5. I do have Memphis 6. I'm wondering if they got exposed a little bit by Golden State, you know, and maybe a team will follow that blueprint and just say, hey, you know what, big man, just Tony Allen's your guy, and we don't care about what he does. Because, I mean, that's Golden State. They kind of neutralize their whole attack by making Tony Allen unplayable. I'm with you. I got 57. I think Tyson adds a lot of professionalism and rim protection and just brings something else they need. I think they actually they got better by losing some of those personalities. I think it's good thing they split the Morris twins up because those guys – yeah, there was definitely chemistry issues last year. And so I think they streamlined their roster, but they're still deep and they're versatile. I like them a lot. And I got Utah, number 8. I think the Jazz would be. Yeah.
Is that pending on Dante Exum news?
Oh, I was gonna do the breaking news thing and do that. But that's heartbreaking, man. Injuries suck so bad. They're strong and they're deep, and it doesn't kill them, but you just hate to see a player go down in the summer. If anyone listening, we're recording this today that Dante Exum got hurt earlier today. We're all kind of waiting, and while we were recording it, we saw an announcement on Twitter that he tore his ACL playing over there for Australia. Get well soon, man. That's sad to hear.
Yeah, that's brutal. And, you know, a guy like Exum who's still so young, you know, as a point guard, these early years, it takes so long to really see where they're going to develop. So, you know, any injury that sidelines them for a long time really hurts, you know, because it's not really about year one and year two. And, you know, Exum was one of the youngest kids in the draft last year. And, you know, it's about years, you know, 3 and 4. And to lose, you know, like I said, significant time from a major injury like this, it would definitely set him back a little bit. So, you know, like you said, hopefully he gets well soon. That's a big blow to the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, and the toughest part about it is, like you were saying, right, it's we know he's a little bit, you know, he's kind of rough. He's very rough around the edges, but the talent's there. But right now, he needs the reps. He needs the time on the court. He needs the time with his teammates, like we said earlier, just to learn and make mistakes and be out there. And this is the time, right? This is the year they're supposed to all kind of take that progressive step forward together. Now he's going to be a half step behind when he comes back. But, yeah, good luck to him, man. That's sad to hear. Let's swing out east, man. Give me your top. Well, we already know who number 1 is. Give me 2 through 4 out east.
I'll go with default. I'll make sure we say it. The default number 1 Cavaliers. They're going to be really, 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 really stupidly good next year, I think. So we'll just get that out of the way. Number 1 Cavaliers. Number 2, we're going to go down to South Beach. We're going to say Miami Heat, number 2. You know, I think the Dragic trade last year was something I was really looking forward to seeing. And then it was like, within hours, the Bosch news came out that he was going to be out for the season because of it was the heart issue, right?
Right. Blood clots,
there you go. So, you know, that was disappointing not to see it come together. But, you know, now they're bringing it back together. And I like the addition of Justice Winslow, and I like that, you know, I like Spoelstra as a coach, and I like the idea of Chris Bosh being back in full time. I like this Miami team, and I'm very curious to see what kind of product they put on the floor. And I think this will be really interesting to see what Spoelstra does with the roster he has. So I'm high on the Miami team for sure. So we'll go number 3. We're gonna go Atlanta. You know, I think they're going to be their system team at this point. You know, they definitely have you know, talented players, but they have a system, and then they'll survive losing a guy like Damari Carroll, which it hurts, but I think that they'll figure that out. But I like what Atlanta did last year.
I'm really concerned about them because they were such a, like you said, system team, but not quite, because like San Antonio's system is, all right, we can plug and play different guys in, and we're not going to even slow down, while mm-hmm. Atlanta seems to be almost like a collection of specifically sized cogs, and they all work together when all five were out there, or you know, all yeah. seven, the bench can come in, but you remove one of those pieces and try to replace it with the quite kind of wrong cog, and all of a sudden everything went to crap. So
yeah, I think
I worry
we saw that
about
right at the end of the season, right? The Atlanta Hawks exactly. lived in the playoffs hurt, and then they just never looked like the Atlanta Hawks after the point. I think it was like Paul Millsap was hurt, and Kyle Korver went down later, and it was just they were always kind of dinged up by the end of the year. And you're right, they didn't look like the Hawks.
Exactly. So I'm worried that losing Damari Carroll, that's replacing a pretty good-sized cog because he was like mm-hmm. a new guy. A guy like Tim Hardaway Jr., I love him, and I hope I got him number three, too. But, yeah, that concerned me with them. When is Korver supposed to come back?
I actually don't have any idea on what his status is. I can't say that I'm up to date on the off-season Korver news myself.
Right.
And then we'll go number four,
Atlanta
right?
Three.
We still got to hit number four.
No, you said Atlanta three. Who'd you have four?
Oh, yeah. Four we got the Chicago Bulls. And maybe they should be higher, maybe they should be lower. I'm going to say I'm a little lukewarm because I want to see what Hoiberg does. I'm a little wary to see this team that's kind of just been in the Thibodeau haze for so long to kind of be under a new coach and you know, work together. I'm concerned about how this all is going to look defensively with another year on his legs. This team obviously is, I think, kind of, they could go really well if everybody stays healthy, and they can go really poorly if one or two injuries kind of take the offensive talent they have. So I got Bulls number four, though. I think they'll still be pretty good, you know, no matter whether or not, you know, they have a new coach coming in.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you got a solid list there. In the East, you really can't go wrong when you get past one, but I got the Wiz number two, and I'm already starting to regret that because, you know, Coach Whitman. I mean, that's the only reason. I think the talent's there. I like the Oubre pickup. I like the side they draft him. I like how Otto Porter came on strong toward the end of the year. But who else? Who'd they get? Jared Dudley. Jared Dudley was a good pickup for them, I think. But, yeah, that Whitman, man. I got Heat 3, and I got Hawks 4. So, yeah, the East is going to be, like I said, it's weird because the Cavs are head and shoulders, I think, above everyone else. So it almost seems like anticlimactic by the time we get to the playoffs because I think the Cavs are going to run away with it, and they're going to pretty tidy. They're going to dust off anybody in the first round. And they're going to pretty much just throttle down anybody else. And I mean, I don't see healthy them making the finals. My problem with the Heat is almost like my problem with the Pelicans because it's all about we keep saying when healthy. Well, Dwayne Wade's not going to be healthy. Anthony Davis hasn't shown that. It's weird how it's always different injuries, but he's always kind of hurt. So I worry about the Heat and the Pelicans. Let's finish off the playoffs, our playoff predictions here. Who you got 5 through 8?
All right, so 5, we're going to hit the Washington Wizards. You know, they have a lot of talent on the team, like you alluded to. They haven't really changed their formula all that much, and, you know, I think they'll be really good, but, you know, I think they're a 5 seed. Number 6, I'm going to go big on the Bucks. I like the signing of Greg Monroe. I like that the Corps kind of really embraces identity of being a defensive team, you know, a young defensive team that Jason Kidd really seems to have kind of gotten to as far as, you know, trust and having that type of reach between his team. So I like the Bucks at 6. And that's, you know, a lot of that does depend on, you know, Antetokounmpo kind of taking a step forward as being a consistent threat as a wing. But I think, you know, the biggest thing for the Bucks is they retain Chris Middleton, who's such a good tool and such a good player for them to keep on their team. And they had to pay a little bit, but I think it'll ultimately pay off. I think they're definitely a lock in the top 6 of the East. We're going to go 7. We're going to go with the Boston Celtics, number 7. You know, I'm not really sure where that roster is headed still. I think there's just a lot of pieces that are still kind of shifting around. but you have, I mean, A, you're in the Eastern Conference, and B, you know, I think Brad Stevenson's maybe the brightest coach that's coming up in the league right now. And I think David Lee should help with some production, you know, kind of balance things out. And, you know, I think and, you know, give Marcus Smart, you know, a second run at the league. We'll see how they look. So I got Celtics 7, and then 8, we're going to go with the Toronto Raptors. I didn't think they were as good as they started the season last year. They started out pretty hot. They were kind of running away with the East for a little bit. And then they just kind of stumbled. Everything kind of fell apart. And to me, I think Raptors fans are really pumped about being a good team, and they kind of overstated how good they were, and eventually they kind of got exposed once the season went on. So I got the Raptors as the 8th seed, and I think that's a pretty big drop for a team like the Raptors, who kind of seemed like they'd be in the conversation as a top 4 team for quite a while, but I don't see it personally.
Yeah, I got my mentions kind of shredded earlier today on Twitter because I said that I posted my just throwaway prediction. I have Raps going 7 in the East, and you know, I got, you know, of course you don't know basketball, you don't know anything. But my thing was, you remember about, I guess, a couple years ago now, Ujiri had his hand on the plunger and he was ready to blow him up. Remember, they were going to send Kyle to New York. You know, and yeah, they were going to blow it all up. And then they won a couple games, and somehow, you know, Jerry pulled the deal off the table or whatever, and they kind of restocked around them, and they made the playoffs. And then this year they just kept it going. That roster is just on the edge of – it doesn't have it. And I think Paul Pierce even said that, right? You know, he said that they don't have it. Mm-hmm. They don't. It's a weird collection of – there's talent, obviously. And
yeah, totally.
I'm probably under on them. They're going to probably finish 5 or maybe even 4, but yeah, they just don't have it. It's weird. Yeah, and mine is I got Bulls. I'm worried about the Bulls a little bit because they were already losing their defensive edge last year. I know they dealt some injured new people. But, you know, I think Hoiberg might even revamp the offense, of course, and that's good. But if they lose that defensive edge, then what are you really going to do? I got the Bucks number 6. I love the Bucks. I love what they're doing there. I think they're going to be really exciting to watch, man. What a unique team. The fact that those wins, man, MCW and then Giannis and the others, you're also going to have Jabari back. It's, you know, you got a long, switching, athletic team, man. It's going to be really fun to watch. And, I got Raps 7, and then I got Celtics 8. You know what, man? I was so upset. I don't know if you followed my saga on Twitter. I've been so upset about us making the playoffs this year. It was so pointless, man. It was so pointless for us to make the playoffs this year. And I had, you know, Celtics fans, you know, oh, well, go find another team. This is exciting. But then look what we did. We drafted Terry Rozier at 16. How excited are you right now?
Yeah, that's a tough thing, right? I've been looking at the same scenario, you know. Both of us have kind of been in the same position in the sense of proud franchises that – you know, are accustomed to losing, and you have a fan base that doesn't want to ever accept losing, and which is great on one hand. You know, I'm glad that, you know, we have those types of expectations as a fan base. But on the other hand, you know, basketball is not just about winning games or, you know, getting into the dance. There's, you know, at this point, there's so much that goes into it, and having a chance at a top lottery pick, I mean, that's for a team like the Celtics, who, you know, still trying to find that identity as far as their star players, and you know, Lakers are in a similar position last year. You know, even getting bumped down one spot last year from what? Just to drop it down to get Randall when we got bumped down. I was a little concerned just losing that little spot. So I can understand how frustrating it is to feel that lottery pick, you know, stripped from you for basically no reason.
I remember, hey, guy, we got Isaiah Thomas. And I was like, why? Why would you do that? Why would you do that right now, Ange? So I almost feel bad because I'm cheering for us to lose. But guess what? It's short term. It's like dieting in the short term, so that you get your body healthy. So after that, you can eat anything you want. That's what I was thinking. That's how I was thinking. But
are the Celtics trying to make another move with those pieces? What's going on? Shed some light on me. What's going on with the Boston Celtics right now?
Yeah, I guess the whole plan, if I'm hearing, is Ainge is looking at it and trying to, you know, how Houston got Harden. Gather up all these assets and picks, and then, you know, just wait for the right deal, and then strike when you get the deal because you have all these pieces that people want, real role players and real picks. Great. I just don't see that. That seems like a once-in-a-blue-moon kind of thing. You can't really plan for that. You know, like, let's think about it. On the rosters around the league right now, who is that next player, that Harden? You know, who's that guy?
Boogie?
Boogie's great. Yeah, Boogie's great.
But
I would love to have
Boogie. Sacramento is probably unwilling to move Boogie because his contract is for 3 years. So who's the guy on expiring contract that you can move pieces for? I don't know.
Well, even
that's a good question.
Expiring, or hey, I would love to have Boogie in Boston, right? I just don't. Other teams don't have the cap space here soon, and there's probably more enticing pieces that would be moved than freaking Sellinger and Olenek and Mickey and. What are we doing, man? So whatever. Don't get me started on that. Don't even get me started. I'd be remiss. You know, this is supposed to be your podcast now. It's all about the Lakers. Let's go back into Tinseltown and talk a little more Lakers. So, who do you think your starting lineup is going to be on opening night?
I think it'll be really simple. I think they'll keep it really, really simple. You're going to go D'Angelo Russell at the one, Jordan Clarkson at the two, Kobe Bryant at the three, Julius Randle at the four, and Roy Hibbert at the five. I think it's going to be really, really simple.
You know, the scary thing is that just hearing it like that and knowing what I know, I'm really surprised by how well how Clarkson played at the end of the year last year. And I think everybody kind of would, right? What was he? He was like a mid-second round pick?
He was like 46 to 48. He's a late 40 pick.
Right, so I was really impressed by him, and so now you have these two athletic guards. Kobe is Kobe, and even at his age now, playing three, he's a threat, of course. So that's actually not a bad lineup. So who do you think your closing lineup will be? Crunch time.
Ooh, I think your closing lineup might end up being Russell, Lou Williams, Kobe Bryant, Brandon Bass, and Roy Hibbert.
That's a good. That's a great segue because I was going to ask you next about some of the other guys you picked up, and you just mentioned two of them. I was really kind of perplexed by the Lou Will pickup for the simple fact that you already have a taller Lou Will on your bench in Nick Young. And yes, yeah. I think Lou Will's a better player, but basically they do the same thing. They want to come in and just shoot. They don't do anything else. They don't rebound. They don't defend. They don't make people better. They come in, and their job is to put the ball up and score, and that's fine. But now you have two of those guys. How do you feel he fits in with your team?
I was very perplexed by it, too. When I saw his signing, it was kind of blue moon. It was kind of out of the blue, rather. And the more I think about it, though, the more I kind of understood where they were coming from. Because basically the Lakers right now are banking on the roster building around Kobe Bryant playing a lot of minutes as a small forward and Nick Young playing his 6 man minutes as a small forward and covering some as a two probably. And you look at their backup point guards on the Lakers roster and they don't have a backup point guard. And whether or not Lou Williams is a point guard, which I don't think he is, you know, I don't think there's an argument there, he can still handle the ball. He can still handle the ball. So I think they were just thinking, we want to kind of keep Nick as a small forward, maybe as a two in spotting minutes. But we need another guy who's a veteran who can help this young backcourt of Russell and Clarkson, who can come in, who can handle the ball, who can take some of the scoring load from the bench and kind of come in that six-man role, which is exactly kind of, you know, what he's made himself into. And I like the signing. I'm not crazy about it. And I think it would have made a lot more sense if they were able to move Nick Young for something. And from all accounts and reports, they did try to move Nick. They just never found that trade. So the Lou Will signing, though, like I'm with it. You know, I think, you know, at this point, with the kind of guys the Lakers have been signing these last few years, you know, signing guys who are like actually talented NBA players is a step in the right direction. So I welcome it in the end.
Okay. I mean, you may make the best of it. Can't complain too much about it. So talking a little bit about
it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Hopefully, he'll come in and shoot. You know that much. So talk to me a little bit about what Brandon Bass and Roy Hibbert mean to this
team. So I think we'll start with Brandon Bass. And Brandon Bass is, from what you've actually told me and from other people told me and from reading around, he seems like a pro's pro. He seems like the veteran guy who's going to, you know, keep everybody, you know, especially young guys, kind of get their heads in the right places and share a wealth of knowledge that he's picked up. And that's not just on the basketball court. Hopefully that's off the basketball court as far as preparation, as far as, you know, what he does, his daily routines. Because he's one of the one of the things is he's super consistent. He never gets hurt. He plays all the time. And the Lakers haven't had any consistent, players over the last few years. It seems everybody's always hurt. So, for one, you're hoping you get a guy who's going to be able to play most of an 82-game season and play heavy minutes, and who's still really not over the hill or anything. He's kind of still, right at the peak of his prime, I guess you could say, at the very end of it. So you take that, and you think that, hopefully he can teach Julius Randle a lot about the game. Hopefully he can teach him about being, a threat from mid-range and how to manipulate defense and how to play his role on defense and how to do all these different things that he really, I guess that's what kind of the Lakers were hoping Carlos Boozer would do last year, but, Randle got hurt. So bringing in a guy who could stabilize behind Randle, I think, was a great move. You can't play Randle, 35, 40 minutes. You don't even know, if you can play him 30 minutes at this point in his career. So you definitely need a talented guy who can play power 4 minutes, and I think Brandon Bass is a great signing. I don't think he detracts anything. I think he adds a lot.
Yeah, I really like him. I like him as a pro, and like I said, he didn't do anything for us because we were in no man's land the last couple of years. But yeah, that's a really good pickup for you guys. I'm going to talk about Hibbert for a second because I see it on Twitter, and I actually had a conversation with somebody today saying Hibbert's a bum, and it just drives me nuts because, I mean, he's one of the best rim protectors we have in the league. I think Hibbert, when I heard you guys got Hibbert, it actually made me sit up for a minute because I thought, wow, they have a real team now. There's no more layup line at the rim. He's going to protect the rim. He's going to give you 8 to 10 points. He's another guy from all reports. He works hard, and he's coachable, he's a professional. That him and Brandon Bass were, I've been saying that, I think the Lakers had one of the better summers of, I guess, not they didn't get LaMarcus Aldridge, of course, but like New York, they had a really, really good summer and put together a nice team on the floor. What do you – I know it doesn't really matter. You don't think they're making the playoffs, do you?
No, I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
Give me a projection of this year, wins and losses. What do you think?
I think they're in the 30 to 35 range. I don't expect them to win a lot of games, honestly. And that's just because the expectations, we still have Aaron Scott coach, and we haven't seen anything out of him that shows that he's going to be able to help an elevated team play above its, seemingly ceiling. So, I think they get the 30, 35 wins, and, hopefully, I think the fans are starting to turn on this page a little bit, but right now, it's not really about the wins and losses. It's all about the development. It's all about bringing these kids together. It's all about seeing what you got. And as long as everybody stays healthy and, we get a lot of opportunities to see Randle, Clarkson, and Russell playing together, and you get to see, hopefully Kobe play out a healthy season with limited minutes where he's not killing himself every night. That's, I think, the ideal situation, and I don't think playoffs are really going to play a factor in expectations this year. At least I don't think they should, because if they do, then I think there's going to be a lot of disappointed fans when the Lakers don't even sniff the playoffs.
All right, so here's the million-dollar question. Kobe keeps saying, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. What do you want? End of this year, Kobe's healthy, and he hasn't made a decision yet, and you, in a Freaky Friday twist, you wake up one day in Kobe's body on the day that he makes the announcement. So you're Kobe. Do you want him back or not? What do you want?
I would take Kobe back. I mean, it would have to be, it's not unconditional. I would love for Kobe to say he wants to continue. I would love for him to wake up and say, hey, I've made a lot of money. I'll take a pay cut. The salary cap's going up anyway. Him taking, $10 million, something like that, $15 million even, something that the Lakers can work with. I think I'd be up for it. But, I mean, he has to show to himself more than anybody, I think, that he can deal with the injuries and age and the mileage, and that he's ready to prepare himself again for another year and another 82 games of putting his body through the type of carnage it goes through. I mean, every basketball player, not just Kobe, and I think Kobe gets, a lot of recognition because he's Kobe, but every player goes through a lot of physical abuse, basically, just playing through these seasons, and, he's been through so many of them, and I think his biggest sticking point is, do I want to do it again? Can I do it again? Is it fun to me anymore? Is it worth it? And, hopefully it is, and hopefully the Lakers can make it worth his time, and, the Lakers are good enough to where he decides, I can go in another year, and maybe we can do something special and, go out with at least a playoff run. So I'm all for Kobe sticking around as long as everything makes sense for every side.
Man, this is like, I've heard of this before, or I've never seen it. I've heard of Stockholm Syndrome before, but I've never seen it. And he's got you guys wrapped. He's got you guys in the palm of his hands. No matter how damaging he is to you, he got now. But yeah, I dig that. I dig that. That's a good answer. I think we hit everything, right? We've covered most of it.
I think we hit everything and a little bit in between and all that. I appreciate that you recognize the Lakers had a pretty big offseason. I agree. I think they made a lot of great moves, and I think everybody right now is kind of optimistic. And I think the Lakers, at the end of the day, you can't question that they tried their best this season to put a better basketball team together, and I think they did. I think they accomplished that.
Hands down, no doubt. Like I said, I'm almost positive. I know I'll never hear the actual truth, but last year was a secret tank, and it was, you know, hey, we're not trying it, but they were secretly tanking by getting Scott in, and they knew that Kobe, you know, once he got his record, they didn't know he was going to get hurt, but, you know, they didn't care. They wanted Kobe to do whatever he wanted. They knew they were going to win games. But I appreciate you coming on, man. I think me and you, we proved that, like, you know, like I said, that no matter how opposite, we can sit down and have a mature conversation, even though I will go back online. I go back online, I'm going to say, you know, screw the Lakers later on. So, but no.
Hey, it's a rivalry I can respect. I can't say the same about the Clippers.
I don't blame you. And hey, everybody listen, me and Drew actually in the same town. That's crazy that, you know, years we've been following each other on Twitter and talking basketball, but you never hung out. So I'm going to make sure, hopefully, maybe like preseason. I know, you know, once the season starts, you're going to be really busy over there at Silver Screen and Roll. Where can everybody find you on Twitter, man? Let everybody know again. I know I said it once. But...
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Drew Garrison, SBN, as in SB Nation, all one word. You can catch all my work as editor-in-chief and, you know, as a writer and as a basketball fan and, you know, lifelong basketball enthusiast over at www.soberscreenroll.com. And, yeah, man, it's been a pleasure being here and chatting with you, and we'll definitely have to do it again. And we'll bring you on to our Lakers cast and have you talk Celtics later on in the summer.
I appreciate it, man. I'm not going to talk too much Celtics because I'm trying to enjoy my summer. So we'll talk anything else. We'll talk to Russ Westbrook and that kind of good stuff. But, hey, man, it's been really fun. I definitely want to check in with you during the season. And, yeah, everybody give this guy a follow, man. Drew Garrison, SBN on Twitter. He's a very knowledgeable, knows of stuff. And, all right, man, I'll catch up with you.
Yeah, man, take it easy.
Hi, brother. Yeah, Drew's a really good guy, man. Great follow, very knowledgeable, and very, very passionate about what he does over there at silverscreenroll.com. So you guys check him out. So that was episode 4. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. I think I've done enough gabbing today. Thank you again to Drew Garrison for stopping on. And be on the lookout. We're going to continue with the team previews. I think I got Orlando next. Or the Spurs, one of them. But, yeah, I'm gonna keep rolling these out, and you guys keep enjoying them. Thanks for stopping by. And I'm out of here.